This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and rewatch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Dana Carvey and David Spade here.
You might know our podcast, Fly on the Wall, featuring guests from across the entertainment industry.
We decided to do a spinoff called Superfly, and it's fun. It's just two of us riffing on current events, pop culture, catching up, impressions.
Joe, Trump's trying to be a dictator.
Yeah, just bump on the tater tots.
Joe, no.
Listen to and follow Superfly on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
The Commanders were alive. And then they were dead. What's up? What's happening? It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are back streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. Apologies to the YouTube audience for disappearing for a week. The show is not on YouTube when I'm not here, and I wasn't here last Monday through Wednesday. And then Thursday and Friday, there were some technical deals that didn't allow us to go live, but we did put some up on YouTube, on the highlights, if you want to go back and watch, although you'd be listening to the preview of a game that we didn't quite see unfolding like that. Let's talk about it first and 10 style.
It's time to get the breakdown started. First up, 10 observations. It's first and 10.
Oh, man.
Number one.
That's the weirdest football game I've ever seen. The first 3.5 quarters are a fairly normal, bad football game. I've covered a lot of games like that, especially in that stadium. Jay Gruden era, just terrible both ways. Two teams, neither of which deserve to win, just playing football nonsense back and forth. And eventually someone has more points at the end. In my experience, because of the time frame that I covered the team, mostly it was the visitor. And then the last 5 minutes of that game, Jaden puts together a beautiful 2-minute drive that looks like they're just going to steal the game. Obviously, the biggest steal comes off the Terry thing, and then all of a sudden, Cyber misses the kick. And there's just so much to chew on in so many facets of this game. But before we dive into specifically the offense to get started, we must simply acknowledge that is the weirdest football game I've ever seen in my life. And I was on the Washington football beat from 2015 to 2019 and have been covering the team from the studio side since 2020. It's a weird-ass football game.
Number two.
All right, let's talk about the offense. I'll tell you, I just got done watching the tape of the offense, and on tape, it is not as bad as it felt in real time in terms of a down-in, down-out execution. That's the good news. The bad news is it was even more frustrating because they actually did some good stuff in this game, and then they just kept finding a way to get in their own way and shoot themselves in the foot. And that is something that you actually see quite a lot of in the NFL from bad offenses. And that is kind of an actually more alarming thing than they just had a bad day, snap in, snap out. Like, a lot of offenses in the NFL are offenses that can string together a couple of plays and then you just know they're going to get in their own way. And we've actually talked about that quite a lot this year, because on the early portion of the season, the Commanders had this luxury of not being one of those teams, while defensively, they could play a style that relied on the fact that a lot of the NFL is. A lot of the NFL, the Titans, who are going to be here next week, are like the ultimate version of this, where, yep, they're probably going to make some plays. Down in, down out, they're actually, we'll move the football in some decent chunks even. And then Will Levis will do one of the craziest quarterback things you'll ever see. Or they'll take a sack or six sacks. Or yesterday they actually took 8 sacks. And they will not ultimately be able to put up the points they need to win. They did yesterday against Houston. But by and large, like, that's how their season has gone. The Cowboys are kind of the same way. Eventually they'll do something to screw it up. And the Commanders have become that team. They've become a team that eventually will, at the very least, not finish drives in the red zone, but will probably find a way to screw it up, whether it is in this game. They're driving a little bit. They get going. They're like 5-6 plays into a drive. And by the way, all these drives have a tremendous starting field position, but they're 5-6 plays into a drive, and Tyler Biadasz snaps it on one, and clearly the snap count was at least 2 because he's about the only guy that moves. And then Jaden just has to wind up taking a sack. It's only a -1, but you've now gone from, I believe it was like a 1st and 10 or a 2nd and 10 to, or a 2nd and 6 to 3rd and 7. And you go from like, hey, 2nd and 6, we're okay. We just get 2-3 yards on a run. It's 3rd and 3. Like, that's where you want to live. Now it's 3rd and 7. You're in a bad spot. They get intercepted on a freaking screen pass in the red zone. You're on like the 22-yard line, so fringe red. One of Cliff's favorite spots to call a screen. And that getting intercepted is on Brian Robinson. And I know that Jaden probably could dirt that. But like, if you freeze frame it, or you look at it frame by frame, if B-Rob can get to a place where he, if B-Rob can get to that ball and like Jaden kind of leads him, and it's not a great throw. It's a little hard for my liking. Like, Jaden's trying to elude pressure and he just fires it in there. And if he can loft it out a little bit more, Brian can run under it, get around the block, and maybe something's happening. But either way, just like, don't bobble it up in the air into the other dude's arms. There's no way that should be picked. And it is. And they go from at least a field goal if Jaden throws it in the dirt to whatever that was. The 8-11 left in the game. They give up the touchdown to Schoonmaker. They come out. They need to get going. They give up. Yeah, the touchdown to Schoonmaker. It's 13-9. They need to get going. And lo and behold, John Bates fumbles. That play design is fantastic. It's a tendency breaker. They do it on a lot of running on first down. Eckler's in there. It looks like they're going to toss it out to him. And they pull the whole defense one way. Bates runs against the grain. Jaden hits him in stride. Easy throw. Easy catch. Phenomenal job by Cliff manufacturing something easy. Great job by Jaden to deliver a ball with anticipation on time. In stride. And Bates just gets the ball knocked out. And it's that kind of stuff all the time that just absolutely kills you in this football game. Which gets us to
number 3.
The offense in general right now looks a lot like LSU's offense in a way that concerned us before the draft, with like kind of what would Jaden Daniels be as a pro. And a lot of those concerns were alleviated early in the season because he did a great job of attacking the middle of the field, throwing with great anticipation, tight windows. He was unbelievably accurate in some of these spots. And then lo and behold, he regresses a little bit to the mean. You have this, this kind of game where he's just throwing a bunch of hitches and goes. And you can't win in the NFL that way. It's just too hard to live on one-on-one matchups on the outside. And it's not necessarily the play calls. It's the quarterback's decision-making to say, hey, I've got these matchups. I'm going to pick the ones on the outside versus letting, you know, a guy like Zach Ertz get open over the middle and hitting him there, or, hitting a dig later on in the down. I'm just going to take the hitch here. Like, I'm going to read this side of the field where we have a one-on-one matchup versus the three-receiver side, which is a little bit more complex, but maybe offers us a higher ceiling because we can get a guy that breaks free and breaks open. And so, unless these are predetermined and Cliff is saying, hey, we're doing this, it doesn't matter what's happening on the three-receiver side, just take the one-on-one, this is a quarterback-driven thing, not necessarily a play-caller-driven thing. You have to find those spaces in the middle of the field. And I know Jaden can do it because he did it earlier this year. And by the way, late in this football game, that two-minute drive with 5 minutes to go, he's ripping footballs all over the place. Digs, comebacks over the middle. Like, as the game went and he kind of had to have it, there's a play that he runs, a throw that he makes on a play that I love in Madden all the time. In Madden, it's called play action comebacks. And they run it, they get to it a little bit differently. They run it out of an eye or a pistol formation. And it's just a quick token fake, but you have tight splits. And then Terry and Noah run deep down the field. Looks like they're pushing vertical and they just stop. And you have to throw that ball with great anticipation while it still looks like it's going to be vertical and trust that your receiver is going to stop exactly where he's supposed to, turn around and have the ball hit him in the chest. And he hits Noah on one of those, and it's how they get out of on that big long drive. It's how they get out of the first and 20 after the Senate hold, was they run that play. And it's a, like, he can do it. He's got to do it more often. He's got to do it earlier in the game. And if you want to put that on the coaches to say they've got to coach that up and emphasize that, fine, but ultimately it's got to be on the quarterback to do it.
Number four.
Which leads me to something that probably a lot of you, I know how this works. You're going to be mad at, but it is what it is, so I'm not going to just pre-fight the fight and yell at people who are going to yell in the comments section. But on the list of problems, I don't have Cliff Kingsbury probably as high as many of you do. If you're Cliff, I don't know necessarily what you call to feel really confident in right now, which is a really rough spot as a play caller. Because when you get picked off on a screen, you're going to call another one? Like, you don't feel good about that. It's a kind of a supposed to be a low risk, potentially high reward play. And you have had nothing but bad plays off of it for weeks on end. I'm not calling that. Okay, so that's out. How else have we gotten easy yardage? Let's run the football. Well, we got some guys on our line that are struggling a little bit right now to nail their blocks. And especially once Andrew Wiley gets out, like, oh boy, we got a running game. No B-Rob and Trent Scott's blocking instead of Andrew Wiley. I don't know that I feel good calling a lot of the runs that were successful for us earlier in the year. All right, well, let's go quick game over the middle. Jaden doesn't really seem to want to throw a lot of that. He's wanting to throw to the outside. And so it becomes a lot of these hitches and goes. And if I have any real critique for Cliff, it would be kind of two things. One, you got to find something in the run game. And I don't care if it's calling these game plan runs, these kind of trick handoff delays, but even those were going for like 3 yards. But you just got to keep searching. And in this game, they went a lot of 13 personnel, and I think they probably could have tried to spread some things out and get some runs out of some different formations. There was a lot of zone read in this game. I'll have a better sense of that after I talk through it with Logan tomorrow on Take Command. But I just feel like there's been ways for them to find something in the run game pretty much all year, and I don't feel like they did yesterday. And it's also hard because you have offensive line and running back changes in the game. So there's a lot of, maybe you find something and then Wiley goes out and then you're like, oh crap, you can't do that anymore. So it's tough gig. And then the other one is going to sound just backwards from what a lot of people I think came out of this game thinking, which is, oh, he didn't throw enough deep shots, not aggressive enough. He was actually too aggressive at times in this game. They were really trying to find big plays down the field. And I think at times, especially considering how good the field position was, like, just take what the defense gives you. And that's hard because Dallas did mix up their coverages quite a bit. There is some there's some cover two stuff where it's like, okay, what they're giving us was the underneath stuff. Well, now they're in cover two, which is designed to take that away. Okay, well, now let's go back to the deep stuff. So Dallas did a good job and called a good defensive game. But, you know, finding ways to maybe, you know, whether it's sending Jaden in the line with two plays or giving some of the audible control, whatever it is, like, you got to be able to take what the defense gives you. They were given some of the underneath stuff early. Like, Terry could have gotten a lot more looks early. Hey, we're calling the double hitches here. Like, look to Terry's side. And so some of this is just getting McLaurin more involved early. But it really is a thing where the execution of the plays, the routes actually being run, the balls being thrown, the decisions being made that just catch the ball. Like, that stuff is a bigger problem. The blocks being executed. They face a ton of pressure in this game because Micah Parsons gave Nick Allegretti a hellish kind of day when they lined Parsons up over him, which was a good job by Dallas doing some stuff they hadn't done a ton of earlier in the year. So that stuff to me is more emblematic of their problems than the play calls themselves, even though everyone just wants to yell at the play caller because that's what people do when we talk about football. All right, that gets us started on our first and 10. Our final six, we'll talk about defense. We'll talk about special teams. Oh, is there a lot to talk about? And some of the other stuff at the end of this game that was absolutely bananas. We'll get to it all next as we empty the notebook out on the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980. Your calls on this Misery Monday, a Tell the Truth Monday, coming up at 4:30 at 301-230-0980. Let's continue our first and 10, though. As we got six more observations to empty out the notebook from the Commanders and Cowboys.
Number five.
Obviously, special teams played, you might say, a quite large role in this game. I've never seen a special teams game like that. This game had a blocked punt, a blocked field goal, two kick return touchdowns, and five missed kicks in total. That counts, obviously, the blocked field goal. But Aubrey misses another one as well. Seibert goes 0 for 2 on PATs and misses the 50-plus yarder. And just the bizarreness of all of that, the Turpin touchdown is wild. I thought Sanders still got blocked in the back, but the bigger problem is Jordan McGee jumps out of his lane. But that is a Deion Sanders classic. Deion did that a ton in his career where he'd muff a punt or a kickoff and then pick it up. Guys like, oh, ball, and they get out of their lane, and that's enough for a guy who's that quick, that fast, like Deion was, like Turpin is, to take it to the house. And it was 20-17. You had two timeouts. You're north of the two-minute warning. And what should have been an ultimate backbreaker. And yeah, in some way, you have to credit the Commanders for their continuance of fighting and the Terry TD and the whole deal, but that was just brutal, which leads us to
number six.
Speaking of Austin Seibert, this is the problem with Austin Seibert and kickers like him. And this is not meant to be a personal attack on Austin Seibert. This is a professional commentary on his skills. He has been money from inside 40 yards in his career. He's never missed from inside 40 outside of a couple of PATs. Those weren't this year until he missed a couple of PATs. His first two misses of the year, which makes it all the more painful. But rewind. That 50-yarder, I don't think they should have given that to him. He's not trustworthy on those types of kicks. He's kicked the ground multiple times. And in that particular case, that seems to be what happened. And maybe the operation's a little bit bad, but let's get a clean kickoff, please. And instead, fourth and two, like, I'm going for it. I have Jaden Daniels. And they don't. And we'll get to more on Dan Quinn's decision-making in just a moment. But outside of not being able to kick 50-yard field goals reliably, you also can't kick the ball through the back of the end zone reliably. And when it's 20-17 and Zach Ertz scores and you are north of the two-minute warning with two timeouts, you want as much time to, or as little time to run off as possible. And you can't give up a big explosive play. You certainly can't give up a score. And so kicking the ball through the end zone would make a lot of sense. And so I asked Quinn after the game, what was the thought process there? And he goes, well, kicking the ball out of the end zone is not as easy as you think. And I, in the back of my head, was like, it is if you're Joey Sly the last couple of years, who had a literal 100% touchback rate. It is if you're Justin Tucker. It is if you are Brandon Aubrey. It is if you are one of the big leg kickers in the NFL. And Seibert is just not that. So instead, they go with what is the best option for them because they can't guarantee that Seibert's going to actually kick a touchback. And that is a dirty ball. And obviously, the worst possible outcome happens. And it's a miracle that they have a remote chance from there because of the Terry touchdown. But if they just kick the ball out of the back of the end zone and play defense, I think Washington has a really good chance to make a game of that. And instead, they don't. And they wind up making it a game anyway. But it's just, this is the downside of going with what they did at the kicker position. I understand they were in a terrible spot. Seibert has mostly been good. I probably wouldn't cut him after this performance. I'd probably give him at least another week, but I have to think about it because Zane Gonzalez was also good in his one appearance and he's already in the building.
Number seven.
Speaking of Seibert and the decision-making by Quinn, it had a bad day at the office. The whole operation. Bad snaps. Trest did his best with the holds, considering, and Seibert missed three kicks. Terry scores this miracle touchdown. Just go for two. And I don't feel so strongly about this that I'm like, this is a terrible decision by Quinn. How could he possibly? I get it. Seibert's been money on. He missed one extra point. What are the chances that he's going to miss another one when he's missed zero all year? He made 20 in a row, 22 in a row. He's missed one. Okay, cool. Let's get it on. Let's go to overtime. And, of course, that's not what happened. You have another bad snap. You have a botched kick. And you then wind up giving up the onside kick touchdown, which is actually the best thing to happen there because it gives you a chance. If dude just goes down, you take a knee and the game's over. But considering how unsettled Dallas must have been in that moment, considering how easily you got the two earlier, considering who your quarterback is, fundamentally, I am going headline. Jaden Daniels, the ball is in your hands. And I am willing to live and die with Jaden Daniels on one play. And I understand, because I asked Quinn about that afterwards, or he was asked about that afterwards. I don't think I actually asked that one. But he was basically like, I didn't want it to come down to one play. And theoretically, it shouldn't have. You kick the extra point, it's all but a formality, and then off you go into overtime, and you have lots of plays to decide the game. But it's not like you're playing well. Yeah, you have the momentum, but just take the momentum before it dies and go for two. So again, is it an indefensible decision? No, it's just clearly not the decision I would have made in that moment. I am trying to say we're stomping on your throats. And I think that is the thing that kind of bugs me sometimes about Quinn's decision making is they talk about being bold. They talk about having this aggressive attitude. And then they manage games extremely conservatively. And I know that you have to be smart, and there are times it has definitely worked off, and maybe in the long run, they're actually doing the right thing. But it just doesn't match the identity of who they are, of being ultra aggressive. We will punch you in the mouth in the most aggressive way possible at all times. And that is part of like who the Lions are. And so if you're going to be that team, then go there all the way, especially when you have arguably the best, if not one of the two or three best, fourth and short quarterbacks in the entire league that defenses have barely been able to stop all year. And in fact, the only time you haven't gotten a fourth down all year is when the quarterback bobbled the snap. You've basically beat yourself. No one has stopped you. So before the 51-yard field goal, after the Terry touchdown, I'm just going for two. That is how I think this football team should operate, and it is clearly something that they don't agree with.
Number eight.
Defensively, they mostly played pretty well in this game. It felt like the run defense is clearly an issue. And that's something I got to look at. Pass rush, we'll talk about that more in a second. But the touchdown they gave up to Schoonmaker late is why they need Marshawn Lattimore. And it is not like it's not BSJ's fault. But because of what happened in the Pittsburgh game, BSJ is on an island out there with CeeDee Lamb, and Quan Martin is like, I'm going to make sure that Cooper Rush knows that he can't throw this ball over here because BSJ is not on an island. So they give him the safety help that we all wanted in the Pittsburgh game. And what happens? There's no one in the middle of the field. Safety or linebacker, whoever it was, doesn't carry Schoonmaker up the seam. And it's a wide open touchdown. And so that is incredibly frustrating. But it just goes to show some of the sacrifices that have to be made because they don't have a one-on-one shutdown corner. And voila, that down goes that.
Number nine.
The pass rush in this game was absolutely horrendous. And Dan Quinn was very not happy about this after the game. He was asked about it very briefly post-game. And Ben Standing set up a question and he was like, hey, so it looked like the pass rush wasn't really effective today. And Dan Quinn goes, I agree. Not good at all. In fact, they had four total pressures. They had one sack. They had one quarterback hit per PFF. They had two hurries all game. That is really, really bad. In any game. That is inexcusable for a pass rush this good against an offensive line that was missing its two starting guards and starting a rookie at center. And has a rookie at left tackle and a pretty meh right tackle by NFL standards. That is not good enough. And we can talk about all the other stuff you want to defensively. This pass rush unit cannot perform like that and expect to win football games. They kind of overcame it defensively. And if the offense gave them anything, then that would have been great. But also, like, Dallas cost themselves points in a litany of ways. That was a bad Dallas performance, and they somehow got away with it with the win, which brings us to
number 10.
If you are a Cowboys fan, you won. Congratulations. Your team played crappy football yesterday, and you got away with it. And you literally gave up one of the most embarrassing plays in the history of the NFL. The McLaurin touchdown at the end is really remarkable. Like, you watch that thing on tape and you're like, oh, this is on purpose. Like, they find a way to manipulate the Dallas, like, picket fence defense. They clearly look situationally, and I think Cliff basically must have been like, or whoever, Tavita, whoever was like, look, if we can fit a ball right here, right now, we can steal a bunch of yards. And sure as you know what, they did, and then Terry just kept on running. That's great, but that can't happen if you're Dallas. That is unbelievably embarrassing. And the fact that they get away with it is a shame. They should get a loss in the loss column. Not saying the Commanders should get a win because they also deserve to lose, but that's kind of the thing. That was a football game where both teams deserve to lose, and unfortunately, someone had to win. And even more unfortunately, for those rooting for the burgundy and gold, that someone was the Dallas Cowboys. When we get back, your calls, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. You already got a couple folks calling in. Tell the Truth Monday is next.
It's Tell the Truth Monday on The Hoffman Show.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
Call us now at 301-230-0980 to tell the truth about the Commanders.
Can't handle the truth.
Or hit the comment section at the Team 980 on YouTube.
It is the Hoffman Show. It is Tell the Truth Monday. So, what you think? Commanders lose a bizarre football game. 36-24 the final? 34-26 the final? Whatever the hell it was. It's not what it should have been. That was like a 16-13 football game where a circus happened at the end. But what are your take on it? 301-230-0980. Let's get things started with Doc in Southeast. Doc, thanks for calling. You are on the Hoffman Show.
Hey, everybody. To tell the truth, Washington has to get back to playing NFL football 101. If we all go back to the first five games, the Washington Commanders nearly played perfect football, almost penalty-free and mistake-free. You can tell that by the amount of punts that's being punted in the last three games, which includes the Dallas game. When you play nearly perfect football, your defense is not on the field more than your offense. Does that mean your offense going out there controlling the clock, controlling the ball, and controlling the scoreboard, and controlling NFL football rules, not getting penalties, not shooting yourself in the foot? And we've been doing a beautiful job of doing exactly that.
No, you're 100% right. Yeah. All right, Doc. Thanks for the call. Yeah, I think you're dead on. I talked about this earlier today. I was on AWOD's show down in Richmond, and he asked me about this too in terms of the penalties and everything like that. Like, they're committing way too many, and there's simple stuff that they're doing where they're like mistargeting runs, and they were just so solid on the details. And this happens, right? Teams get fatigued. Like, they are human beings who have played a lot of football. But you also just came off the mini bye. Like, it's a division game. You got to be locked in. That's the job. And ultimately, they didn't do it. And I think we can both understand it and be like, I get why they're tired, why they're banged up, why you know, if you're in pain, why maybe your brain is not as locked in on your assignment as usual because you're just like, damn, my shoulder hurts if you're, I don't know, Brandon Coleman. But like late in this game, Brandon Coleman lines up too far off the ball and it costs them a 20-yard strike from Jaden to Diami. And they wound up kicking the field goal on that drive, which, by the way, good clock management from Quinn there. Love that decision. And obviously you see how it plays out. But I think that just the lack of detail and becoming one of the, like I said off the top, becoming one of those teams that you know, if you give them enough plays that they will screw it up, that's not how this team is designed. And that they're going to have to simply be better than that. 301-230-0980 is the phone number. Let's go to Reggie. Reggie, thanks for calling. What's your truth on the Tell the Truth Monday?
Hey, Craig. Thanks for taking my call. Tell the Truth Monday. Hey, Craig, I'm going to have to go back on the play calling, man. You know, I mean, there has been a history of this guy, Cliff Kingsbury's play calling, kind of regressing in the second half of the season. And, I'm seeing it. I mean, everybody's seeing it ever since the Steelers. I mean, yeah, Steelers. I mean, the Ravens, Steelers, actually, then Philly. Now Dallas. Seems like they're kind of doing something similar with their back in the box. I don't know if it's something they see in the play call. And then I understand, you know, you mentioned something about the players are responsible. They got to execute. But we got to scheme guys open as well. I mean, why not throw screen plays through some of the wide receivers?
They did throw screens to the wide receivers yesterday. They threw two to Diami. They threw a screen to the running back. It got intercepted. And by the way, I'm glad you brought up the stacking the box thing. That is, they're not stacking the box again just to stack the box. They're stacking the box because Cliff has three tight ends in there. So it's Cliff is inviting the stacking of the box and just trusting that they're going to win. And he's been right in a lot of those situations. Like, some of their better runs were when Bates, Ertz, and Sinnott were on the field yesterday, and including some of the bigger Jaden runs where they ran zone read out of that look. And so some of that is not quite as simple, I guess, as people make it out to be. And I guess my counter is, like, what plays is he supposed to run when everything he's calling, the players are making mistakes on? Like, there's no play that's scheme or that's execution proof. And I think the problems right now are far more execution based than they are play calling based. It's not like the plan isn't good. It's, hey, this would have worked if Nick Allegretti hadn't lost his block, or if Brandon Coleman hadn't mistargeted his run, or if Noah Brown hadn't run his comeback route with a really, really slow break that allows the DB to break on a ball that otherwise would have been completed on a 3rd and 7. Those are good play calls, but you got to execute.
You got to execute. I agree with you, Craig.
I hear you, Reggie. And by the way, you're not wrong on the historical trend of Cliff Kingsbury. And so I am very open to the idea that there are things that are happening that are maybe predictable, or the solutions are too easy for the defense. And it's something that, like, Logan and I will explore tomorrow, and I'm going to pick his 10-year NFL veteran football brain on Take Command on it. But I do think in my watching of the tape, like, what I see is some opportunities that aren't being taken advantage of. And if the opportunity's there, that seems to suggest that the play call should have been a good one and the players have to do it.
What about him just having McLaurin on one side? Why not move him around? What about motion, man? I don't see a lot of that with this guy. I mean, it just – huh?
Yeah, I mean, I hear you on that. And one, I will say like one thing. And Reggie, I'm gonna let you run just because we got a bunch of calls stacked up. But okay. great questions. I really do appreciate your call. One thing I do wonder about with the Terry left side thing, like Terry is having the best season of his career, so clearly it's not awful. I also think that Cliff uses formations in a way that's pretty unique in the league. And some of the things that other coaches do with motion, he does with formations. And sometimes, like, one of the things that Sean does really well is gets Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp free releases. Like, Terry's not getting jammed on the line of scrimmage all the time. Like, he's got free releases. He's got the things that other coaches get with motions based off how they formation him. My question, which I'm going to do some more research on and I'll have a better answer for tomorrow, is, does Jaden just like throwing to the right more? Like, we all, it's a pretty obvious thing. Like, if you imagine yourself playing quarterback, think about taking a snap, going to your right or your strong side and how comfortable that feels versus kind of that feeling of, I take the snap, I have to open up across my body and throw back across my body to the left. Because I will tell you, I don't conceptually have a huge problem with keeping a receiver on one side. I have a huge problem if that side is not the side my quarterback likes throwing to. And I think that shows up yesterday where on some plays that are mirrored, where the coverage is mirrored as well, the matchup he chooses is Noah Brown versus Josh Butler. Why can't that be Terry on Josh Butler? I'm very open to the idea that you should just switch your receivers. One, to see if the cornerbacks switch, and if they don't, well, now I've got my best receiver on their worst corner. That's advantage me. And two, if my quarterback likes throwing these hitches and goes to the right, if he's just more comfortable throwing that direction, then I need my best receiver where my quarterback is most comfortable. And so I got to do a little more research on that in terms of kind of Jaden's throw heat map. How often is he right versus left? But that is something I am more open to for that reason, that is a problem, than maybe I was earlier in the year. Because schematically, I don't have a huge issue with it because of some of the stuff they do with formations, but that obviously would not be ideal. More of your calls on Tell the Truth Monday next. And truth be told, well, we're actually only going until 5:30 today because we got hoops tonight early on this holiday week. So we can take some calls into the 5 o'clock hour as well. It's Tell the Truth Monday on the Hoffman Show. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Coming up at 5 o'clock, we will either take more of your calls or we will run through our pick six from Friday. We can't do it at 6 today because we're not on the air anymore. We got hoops coming at you tonight. You better get your Hoffman Show while you can this week. We're on at 5:30 tonight. We're live at Capital One Arena tomorrow until 6:45 ahead of the Wizards Emirates Cup game against the Bulls. And then Wednesday, we got Maryland hoops and we're not even on at all. So thank God I don't have to talk about this silly game that much. But we'd get you off and show while you can, limited supplies here on the holiday week. And then obviously, well, there's the holiday. 301-230-0980 is the phone number on a Tell the Truth Monday. Let's go to Zach in Richmond. Zach, thanks for holding. You are on the Hoffman Show.
What's up, Craig, man? Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
To be honest, man, I think there's three things that are coming up that I'm seeing after, you know, being 7-5. First thing is our wide receiver room. I honestly believed when we got rid of Dotson, I thought that was because Luke McCaffrey, Zach Ertz, or Zacchaeus or De'Ami Brown was going to step up and really be a solid wide receiver three. That really hasn't happened. But I understand why that probably did happen, because during the training camp, they thought they had a good cornerback room. That's why they kept Emmanuel Forbes on the team. They thought that he was going to become something. Now they realize, oh, our cornerback room isn't that good. And now our receivers that we thought we had faith in really can't get open when we play better teams. After Terry, I think you mentioned something earlier. Jaden looks right. Even when we played the Bengals, that bomb to Terry was on the right side. Mm-hmm. He looks at that right side, and Noah Brown always gets those targets, but he's not. He's like a 50-50 catch. And we really need those times to go to Terry. That's the one thing. And then
real quick, Zach, before I will let you finish just to respond to that point. I do think a lack of wide receiver playmakers is a problem. I don't really understand why McCaffrey's not getting more looks, because when he's out there, he seems to do things well and is open a lot. On, like, he's the fourth read in the concept, but he's doing his job and he's wide open. And, you know, Jaden's throwing something earlier. I know Mark Bullock wrote about that on his Substack, and he's 100% right. I do not think it is because they thought the cornerback room was good, though. They've known that cornerback is an issue since the spring. It's why they traded for Lattimore. They kept Emmanuel Forbes because he was trending the right direction by the end of training camp, but that quickly, you know, the trend line turned again. They know their cornerback room is not very good. I don't think they had misgivings about it. I just think there was only so much money and so many different things they could address in one offseason, and that was something that didn't get addressed. But I don't think they have any false pretenses about the fact that they need to upgrade their receiver room moving forward, and that they had any odd belief that this cornerback room was actually good.
Yeah, for sure. The second point was that the line. We weren't able to invest as much in the line this year. Of course, we had that $100 million in cap space, but we don't have big boys. Like, when we go up against bigger teams, we don't really have big line offensive linemen. And then when we don't have the depth of that, that really messes us up. Like, people are talking about Jaden might be the problem. It's not Jaden. The offensive line in the first 7 weeks, they were moving people. We were getting a great – I mean, we were almost number one in rushing in the league, you know. But they're getting run down, and we don't have the depth for that. So with that and our rushing game being stifled, our offense is stifled because, like you said, we're not getting the ball to McCaffrey. We barely get it to Zacchaeus or De'Ami Brown. And if Terry's not making huge 80-yard runs, everything else is stifled. So, man, I'm looking forward to see if we can do something with the Titans. I mean, I hope we can get into the playoffs. You know, we're really going to have to fight and really, you know, look ourselves in the mirror to get into the playoffs because, I mean, we got the Eagles again. We got the Cowboys at Dallas. Like, they don't want to lose that game. And then the Saints and the Falcons all want to get into the playoffs. So we're really going to have to make something happen to get in.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, they should be favored in every game, but maybe the Atlanta game and obviously the Philly game. But that doesn't guarantee anything. They were 10.5-point favorites on Sunday, and they lost. This team is clearly trending the wrong direction. And I'll say this, Zach. First of all, great stuff. Appreciate your call. Second of all, the offensive line, they've actually struggled with speed more than power. They are not moving people the way they did earlier this year. Every single one of those dudes is carrying an injury. Like, Allegretti, I don't know what's going on with him right now. And I know that, like, Nick Allegretti's not a world beater, but, man, he had a rough one yesterday. You know, Coleman's not getting the push that he did since he hurt his shoulder. Wiley's been in and out of the lineup. Cosme didn't have a particularly great day yesterday. Biotish is banged up as well, and I think it shows at times, although he's probably playing the best out of all of them from what I can see. So it's tough. And I think a lot of the base runs they had earlier in the year, these pulling actions, those are tough against teams. Excuse me. Tough against teams with smaller, quicker personnel. And that's what the Cowboys are. 301-230-0980. The phone number. Let's go to Ronald, who had a question for us here on a Tell the Truth Monday. Ronald, what's up?
Hey, Craig, how's it going?
Going pretty well. How about you?
Listen, it's a game of quarters. We got to win the first and the fourth, in my opinion. You got to start fast and you hold on at the end. Just simple. Football is a simple game if you go by the right way and they coach you up the way you're supposed to be playing. I understand the talent level, but if it's just a mediocre team, you can find ways. It's just how the scheme has to work right. And real quick, Craig, on one particular play, I came into question the rules of the game. It's like, I'm mad because why did they change the kickoff rule? I think the players don't get there on there as fast as they used to, even though it's a shorter gap. It just seems like the wedge just busts quicker than the old school way. Back in the 80s, I think that guy would have dropped the ball. Somebody would have been right there on him, ready to fumble it, or he would have fumbled it in the end zone, or they would have been on the 5-yard line. That's just my two takes. Thanks, Craig.
Yeah, you got it, Ronald. I disagree with that. And my evidence would be, go watch the amount of times that Deion Sanders in the 90s fumbled kickoffs and then did exactly what Kevontae Turpin did. The problem is, on a botched kickoff, whether the old style or this style, is the second that ball is loose, guys go from, I have to stay in my lane and have integrity, to the plan, they shift for that mindset to ball, which is kind of what you want on some ways, like defensively when the ball's on the ground, like become a football player. Go get the ball. Not on kickoff return. Stay where you are. Unless you are right there. Unless there is a pile of scrum. But if there is a chance at a return, you have to stay in your lane. And Jordan McGee got out of his lane because he was like, ooh, the ball. And that's exactly where Kevontae Turpin spun into. And that has happened. And by the way, even more recently, Steven Sims had a kickoff return like that in 19. Basically the same spot on the field, same situation. And it looked the exact same if you were to start it when the guy's running down and the old rules were at the 30-yard line or wherever they line up now. So, Ronald, I get it. But there definitely are times if they kick it around 2-3 times, those guys cover ground fast. But you kick it once, you pick it up like Turpin did. I don't think that's any different. All right, let's wrap up with Stern real quick. Last one on a Tell the Truth Monday. Stern, thanks for calling. You're on the Hoffman Show.
Yeah, I had a couple of things. I think, and a couple of callers already talked about it, is that I think I blame Cliff on this, and I think he's not progressing with the offense. And by that, what I mean is he's not allowing Jaden to develop into a growing pocket passer. And he's relying on him running the ball too much, which – the more you run your quarterback, the higher the chances you get hurt. I saw the Carolina game. He's going to get hurt by getting pulled down from the back. You saw Micah Parsons pull him down from the back. You saw Pittsburgh pull him down from the back. When you build your whole offense around your quarterback having to run, and in the Carolina game, he threw the ball. He ran early in the game. We didn't even see if he could have success against a weaker defensive line throwing the ball. And if you play better defenses, you're going to have to beat them from the pocket. And so I think in some ways he's slowing his growth. And when we get in a jam where he's got to throw it, he's showing you he can throw the ball. Case in point, the Dallas game at the end. So I just think he's not trusting him enough to read defenses. He's practicing. He's got the virtual practice sessions. Let him try to read defenses and grow like the other rookie quarterbacks. I would rather see him struggle some and learn from the pocket and try not to get him hurt as much, because that's the only way we're going to be a Super Bowl team. So I'll jump off and
Here's the problem with that is if you do that right now with him behind this line, it looks like Sam Howell behind that line last year. So is that what you want? Oh, he's gone. I thought that was just a pregnant pause. It was not a pregnant pause. He hung up the phone.
Yeah, he got out of there.
Also, hilarious, because I feel like Stern sounded a little bit like Cliff. He had that big, deep voice.
I love it.
You sound a little bit like Cliff Kingsbury. He's like, I'm blaming Cliff. And I was like, that's interesting. I think the problem with that is, one, you can't just do everything to develop your quarterback and just be like, hey, this is basically a glorified practice. It's Jaden's practice time. Like, no, these are professionals. They're trying to win. And so you have to approach the game that way. You have to have a game plan that suggests we are trying to win this game. And if you want your running game to be more effective, some of the zone read stuff is some of their best runs on gives or on keepers. Jaden also is going to run. If he doesn't see what he likes in the pocket, he is going to try to get out of there and run. And there's a couple times in this game where he does that. I'm just flipping through my notes and I just fundamentally disagree. Their best drive of the game is basically all runs. They run. It's the first drive of the second half where they score. It's a run. Jaden hits a quick slant. That was great. They zone read inside. They give the ball to Eckler. He gets a first down. And that play, by the way, is basically the same play that Jaden pulls for the touchdown seven plays later, whatever it is. Get the holding penalty. Delayed handoff. They run that play action comebacks to Noah. That's a great throw by Jaden with anticipation. But it's an easier look off of play action. It's a little bit of a predetermined. And then Jaden has a keeper for the first down. They run two three straight running plays, and then they run the on third and three the touchdown off the option. Like, that's how this offense is going to live, and it's the best way to keep Jaden safe, because when you're a designed runner, you're at least going to try to deliver blows. You're protecting your body. You're thinking like that, as opposed to getting crushed in the pocket. And between this offensive line that doesn't have a ton of talent and the receivers who are not going to win with regularity because they're not very good, just saying, oh, Jaden should just sit in the pocket all day is a good way to get your quarterback killed and not stack any good reps, and he's just going to run for his life all the time because the passing concepts need to be supported by a bunch of other stuff. So, like, I get the thought process there. I'm not saying, like, you're out of your mind. How could you possibly think that, you moron? That's not at all how I feel about that call or about that idea. It's just once you get into the practicalities of it, as opposed to just being an idea, the idea doesn't actually hold up under the current set of circumstances. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. When we get back, our pick six at 5:05-ish.